How's it going, guys? You're live, and welcome to the Flood Show for the first time, Huntress, and welcome back, Spy Hunter. How you guys doing?
Good, man. Very, very good. I'm excited to be here, actually, especially with Huntress. This is awesome. It's really cool. Glad to bring her on. This is her first time here, yes, definitely. I just want her to be comfortable, you know. Let this be kind of a, you know, like what you were saying, a laid back kind of thing, you know. Let's just have a conversation, let's just see where it goes, and you know.
I'm fine.
You're
Hello,
good?
Flood.
Okay, good.
Hello, Flood.
Huntress,
it's
great to hear Huntress's voice. It's great to hear you guys, and it's great to have you on. I'm going to put your picture up here. But welcome, and I want to start with Huntress just because ladies first, and I think the audience is very interested in her. But tell us, Huntress, introduce yourself, I guess. Most people know you. I mean, like, you've been around forever. I met you on Gab several years ago. And I think you were a fixture there then. You were at least already well established by the time I even came to Gab. But I've known you through Gab and through just this thing that we've been doing for, it seems like, forever now. But you've always been a really good friend, a really good supporter, and a really diehard National Socialist. Tell us, how'd you become one? And give us a little backstory, whatever you're comfortable with.
Well, I've actually been around this scene for about 10 years. It's been a long time for me. I'm an OG now. And how did I become a National Socialist? Well, my dad loved Hitler, but then I was a bad daughter and just didn't want to be associated with that for many, many years. I just got tired of being called a Nazi, and I just finally said, yeah, I am.
That's awesome. You just lean into it. You're like, fuck you, nigger. Yeah, I am a Nazi. Yeah.
I am a Nazi. Oh, I mean, more than that, I'd say that what really introduced me to the scene was Gamergate, because I have two boys. They're in the chat, and they were young at that time and gaming. And I knew that kids were saying nigger on the internet, you know, and it just really bothered me that they were being harassed for that. And so funny enough, I started following what was his name? Sargon of Akkad, that faggot, right? And he did this whole thing about who all of the groups were along what was called the alt-right at that time. And so I started investigating who they were and started listening to Red Ice for a little bit. And then they had on Mike Enoch and Jesse Dunstan, right? The Daily Show of guys.
Yeah.
And those guys just kind of blew my mind. They were just saying nigger, 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 nigger. And it just, like, I couldn't handle it. And so I turned off the show thinking, oh, this is just terrible. You know, this is disgusting. And then I just kept thinking about it, you know, what they were saying. And I went back and listened some more and turned it off again. And then I was doing dishes and I'm like, damn it, I'm going to listen to this to the end. And I started listening again. And then I just started laughing and laughing and laughing. And it was just washed over me that this is, like, not a big deal. I got to get over this. It's free speech. And I just kind of went from there, learning more and following. I didn't go to Charlottesville, but I followed it closely. And I survived that. And then I never got into Nick Fuentes. I survived the Groiper War on Gab. And then I survived the breakup of the GTV crowd in the beginning of FTJ. And now I've survived white pilled. And so I think I'm just going to hang out here at FTJ with my best friends and see what we can do with the Hunters Multimedia to educate and praise Hitler.
That's a great segue. That's a great segue, and I totally agree. Praise Hitler. I love that you're kind of a convert, and you've already got notches on your gun butt. You know, there have been a lot of wars. I remember the Trapped Wars. I remember the Bill. I can't remember his name anymore, man. But I remember the wars with him. The guy that was following Trump. There were so many things that happened on Gab.
Mitchell.
Yeah,
Mitch
thank
Mitchell.
You. Thank you, Mitchell. Yes. And
oh, yeah, I remember.
You remember that too, Spy? So, yeah, we've kind of been through some shit, man. And Gab was fucking nuts back in the day before Torba kind of screwed it over.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Hunters Media. Tell us more about that, both of you. You guys get to fight over who talks.
Go ahead, babe.
I missed the question.
We wanted to inquire a little bit more about Huntress Media, but no hurry. And Spy, you're welcome to. I didn't mean to cut you off. You want to say something?
How about Spy has some stuff he wants to talk about. Let him go for a bit.
Well, the Huntress Media, yeah, that's just kind of a, you know, what we've been doing with that is, you know, really just having fun with AI, you know, and that's really kind of how it all started, coming together with that. When me and her met, she was already playing around with it. In fact, she had been playing around with it, I think, probably even before I even started really getting into it. And then, you know, and then me finally deciding to start building, you know, Spy AI. So I would say that Hunters Multimedia was kind of the launching board for Spy AI. So when we started, you know, started getting together, making the stuff that we were making, you know, it just hit me that it's like, you know, this is just as much of a propaganda machine as what the Jews are using to do their propaganda.
Yep.
Yet it's so much cheaper. Well, in a lot of regards, it is, you know, I mean, you know, they're spending millions of dollars to make something that we could make for roughly about $200 or $300, you know, and it's so when I found that it's just going to absolutely level the playing field whenever it comes to this and completely take away the power that they have, the power of influence, it just clicked. It just clicked with me, and I had to run with it, you know. So, you got anything to add to that?
I would just say I started making Suno songs just last summer, and I was just really getting into using Premiere for making videos. I had been doing some for Veil. And we have more on the way with that. And but now I feel really comfortable with Premiere. I can slap together a video in a reasonable amount of time. And so with Spy AI, now I don't have any censorship. You know, I kind of lost the AI that I had. I'm not sure exactly why they cut me off, if it was too many swastikas or I was just using the service too much, but they won't let me use it anymore. So
she went full production.
Yeah. And I just see this as a wonderful opportunity for us to really make high quality propaganda like we haven't been able to in the past. for a reasonable price, you know.
100%.
Mm-hmm. With Spy and with what Flood's doing, my goodness, he's the king of production in this realm. I'm so excited that we're going to be able to offer all the tools that you use or haven't even used yet that you can try out and see what you can make with them. So I just think we're going to really go step up a level in what we're doing.
I agree, and yeah, I think what you've already done has been pretty groundbreaking, at least as far as putting together different things. Of course, you guys are kind of a tag team now, where Spy was always into, you know, like security, hacking, stuff like that, into that sort of, you know, that whole culture. You kind of bring a more refined, I think a more elevated kind of class to things as well, and then you guys get together, and then wham, bam, you guys are putting out stuff that's incredible, things that haven't really been done before. You're kind of already pushing the boundaries. Where would you like to take it from here? How far do you think this can go?
Well, I would actually like to, you know, get to the point to where we're actually making full-length feature films and movies, you know, and showing those off in our own theaters and stuff. Yeah, you know, that's where I'd like to see it. You know, I'd like to see it take over the media, the Jewish media, the you know, I'd like to see it take over, you know, not necessarily take over, but help us facilitate our own artistic endeavors. So, you know, now the way I see AI is not as the means to the end or even the end, but just as a tool, just as a you know, just like, you know, whenever you go out into your yard, you need to dig a hole. You know, you grab a shovel to dig the hole so that way you don't have to dig it with your hands. Right? Now, you don't have that shovel actually dig the hole for you, although that would be nice a lot of times. But if your passion and your work involves doing that, you know, you still find meaning in actually taking control and doing some of the things yourself while using the facilities of the tool that you have to help you make the job that much easier, right? Mm-hmm. So whenever you're doing when you're called to a particular I guess you could say occupation or, you know, and you're really good at it, it's, you know, it's not work because it's fun, right? You know, but when it really does become hard and when it does become work and the fun is taken out of it, you know, that's just kind of, you lose motivation, you know, when you're banging your head on things and you can't figure things out and you're just frustrated and you just want to rage quit. You know, that's what having the proper tool does is it keeps you from having to do that. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, though, is that, you know, those tools need to be used properly. You know, if they're not, yeah, go ahead.
My first goal with Spy AI is just recruiting more people and getting them trained on how to use the tools and being able to visualize what they can do with them, because we have a lot of talented people. We have people who are artists and who are musicians and or have writing skills, And I want them to learn to understand that AI is an assistant for their talents. It's not a competition. Is that, you know, say you can paint. Well, then you can use AI to animate your paintings and turn it into something that's a much more impactful visual art than just hanging on a wall. Or if you're a musician, wow, Suno, you can make some really good songs and then perform them.
Absolutely.
If you have a good idea, or if you have a story that you've written, you can use chat to turn it into a script for like a movie. And we just need to assemble, because, yeah, we can compete with the Jews with AI media because it is so much cheaper. But it's still, you know, a feature film would be a lot for Spy and I to do all by ourselves. We need help. And yes, so it's there. This is a world of opportunity with the AI. I really want to help people learn how to use it and, you know, learn how to make video and see what we can do, because I think we can take over. Because, you know, we see that there's a demand for it. I mean, how often do you go on social media and you see all the boomers complaining about brown Snow White? But that's all they do is complain. And I don't want to complain. I'm done complaining. I just want to make media that they will like.
I agree 100%.
I think we have a golden opportunity.
Yeah.
I find that one of the best things to do I probably get more credit than I deserve for things. I mostly just try to make people say nigger and make people say nigger to people that wouldn't normally, you know, that wouldn't normally say that or hear that. And really, I've used it more as just kind of a provocative tool. But I think that you're right. Like, there's a lot more opportunity for expression. There's a lot more opportunity for people that just that you can't get an interview with, you know, in Hollywood. You can't get a call back on anything. Like, we have a lot of white creatives. In fact, whites are more creative than Jews. And I think that's one of the reasons that Jews, you know, lock us out of everything. I like the idea of taking over Hollywood, or more destroying them. You know what I mean? Because it's a degenerate.
Absolutely.
They're absolutely pushing anti-white agenda. You know, as far as a tool in the fight, what are your thoughts on using it for, like, more? I don't want to say malicious, but let's just say more tactical and strategic purposes, like. You know, if we want to manipulate the other side, if we want people to, you know, if we want to actually do propaganda and psyops, you know, that gets a little bit dirty. But it seems like the uncensored AIs are really capable of that. Is that your experience too?
Yeah, I think so. You know, in fact, the AI is even making it more enhanced, and it's, you know, we're coming into a new generation of mimetic warfare here. It's, you know, like, you know, whenever I got into this whole online movement or whatever, whenever I first joined Gab and stuff back in 2016, I, you know, the main thing that Gab was good for was shitposting, right? And that was really all I really liked to do, was just shitpost, you know. And the way, of course, to do that was with memes. Now, we're here almost 10 years later, right? And it's gone from just, you know, people slapping stuff together with Photoshop, all the way up to now, you know, we're making Loras of people, you know, and making them do certain things. And it's like, you know, whether it be a certain pose or like what you were saying, making them say nigger and stuff like that. It's like, yeah, it, you know, the technology has just grown exponentially whenever it comes to being able to do this. And what I see right now at the moment is our side, our people dominating this field. They're taking it. They're running with it, and it is making the Jews big mad, to the point to where, you know, they have to put all these guardrails into this stuff to try and prevent us from being able to do this. But of course, you know, we're a lot smarter than they are. And
yep.
A lot of us are able to figure out how to either jailbreak it or, you know, just, you know, find our workarounds and stuff like that and still accomplish what we want.
What's your take, Huntress? Where do you think things could go? Go ahead.
Well, with Spy, the sky's the limit. I mean, I didn't really realize what this guy was capable of. You know, I've known him for 10 years, but I didn't realize how much stuff he was doing behind the scenes that was really cool. And I'm just like having so much fun learning about hackers and what they do. It's a lot of fun. Yes, definitely for propaganda. I mean, yeah, it'll be fun to do movies and artistic pieces, but that kind of goes together. And there's a particular project I'm working on. I'm going to put the link in the chat. Please follow this guy on Twitter or on X, whatever it is. This Meade Chapel at, what is it? It's at Middlebury College in Vermont. And they're removing the name Meade from the chapel, even though this guy like paid for the chapel. And he was very influential there, and very generous. But the school at that time had a eugenics program. For like 50 years, they ran a eugenics program, and it was ended. And now the do-gooders are like out to destroy this man's reputation. And there's a group that's fighting it. They have a lawsuit, trying to defend the guy. And another person associated with this is Douglas Mackey. You remember him? He was arrested for making a meme about Hillary Clinton. And he's an alumnus of Middlebury. And this kind of leads into something else I wanted to talk about. That's education. And something that we need to kind of fight against is the anti-intellectualism of the conservatives. Because that's just shooting, because you know how they respond when they see stuff like this about Middlebury and how woke it's gone and stuff is, they say, well, don't send your kid to college. Well, that's defeatist, you know? And can you imagine whites without an intellectual class? I mean, it was our invention. We created the whole concept of higher education. And for that to be just given over to Jews is disgusting, to say the least. And it also just cuts us out of the conversation, because any job associated with deciding the direction of our culture usually requires education, right?
Yes.
And I also see it as important in recruiting young women, because like it or not, they've been told since they were tiny that they had to get an education, and they did it. And now everybody makes fun of them for having an art history degree, you know? And I want to show them that, hey, you know, with National Socialism, that knowledge is valuable to us, because you learned about our culture, about our history, about our art and our technical skills and stuff. Come with us and learn to make some videos and stuff about what you know. And so I'm going to start. I'm going to start sharing. I don't have an art history degree. My degree's in actual history, bachelor's of science in history. And so I want to, you know, share what I know and continue helping Vail and give a version of women's history that isn't a bunch of feminist bullshit. You know, because we are major participants in history. You know, museums are full of stuff made by women because we were the, especially anything that's fabric related, you know, because like the ancient Greeks were, they thought that it was effeminate for a man to weave. That was just, no, you don't do that, you know.
Yeah. You're like, what are you doing, Lance? Are you crocheting again? We just killed a lion. What are you doing? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually am crocheting while I'm talking.
I know that you are. You've been on this for a long time though. Like when we first started out streaming, you were already making commercials, you were already making promos, and they were tutorials of yourself involved in your craft. Craftsmanship is white, right? Like it's totally white, yes, to spread this kind of knowledge. That's what we did before video games, didn't we?
Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. And actually, there's a huge resurgence in crochet with Zoomer girls. It's just astonishing. I go on YouTube and there's all these young girls and they're crocheting. It's a fad right now. And so it's an opportunity for us to like bring them over to our side, because the other side just keeps telling them to be, you know, be a lesbian and get a science degree and stuff they don't want to do. You know, they actually like crocheting. Believe it or not, girls like doing girl stuff. And so the conservatives aren't giving that to them. The conservatives just tell them, oh, let me see you shoot, you know, and pose with a gun.
They are simple like that. They're just like, leave me alone. Just as long as you leave me alone, you can do what were they saying behind closed doors? Whatever you do behind closed doors, your business. Don't bother me about it. They are checking out on everything. I that's a great point.
Yeah. Yeah, they've abandoned the kids. That's
right.
Anyhow.
Yeah, and you know, and it's you know, gone to where, you know, people are not learning to do things with their hands anymore. You know, it's they don't have, you know, a lot of them don't have the muscle, hand-eye coordination skills to be able to build things. You know, the reason why things are falling apart right now is because we don't have enough builders. And I would like to get to a point where we can educate people to start building things, you know, and, you know, to Hunter's point, you know, the crocheting is building something, you know, for a woman, right? You know, whereas for us, it's either building a computer or a house or a robot or whatnot for us guys, you know. And in doing so, you know, there's that saying, you know, the idle mind is the devil's workshop, right? You know, so it's like if you're just sitting around doing nothing, you know, what exactly are you thinking about? What kind of thoughts are going through your head when you're focused on a particular task and you've got your hands moving, as you know, as you're building, you're not thinking about the other things that are trying to intrude into your mind that want to you know, send you into a, I guess what you'd call a death spiral, or, you know, send you into a state of depression, whatnot. When you're focused on a particular task and you start seeing what you're doing come to fruition, it it's just such a big motivator to keep going and to keep building more. And this is precisely how civilization was built. This is precisely how empires are built. That's what we are as the white race. We are empire builders. We're civilization builders. And it's not going to be done just sitting around playing video games all day. It's not going to be done doing anything else but building. So we've got to get our guys busy, man.
Shouldn't we be infighting over religion and doxing each other, though? Isn't that really what we should be doing? Like if I sit around and do nothing long enough, won't I become Puerto Rican?
That seems to be what the kind of the common denominator of these people that are doing this kind of shit. They just don't have anything else to do or serve any other purpose.
They were out of beer by 11.
right, exactly.
I like that you guys are productive. You guys are more productive. I like that you guys stay busy types. You do build things. You've always been busy on stuff. And sadly, Spy's gotten. I just think from the way the community used to be, he's gotten. It's not a bad reputation, but he's never really gotten enough credit for what he actually knows. Because I talk to Spy a lot behind the scenes, and Spy's a lot smarter than most motherfuckers I've ever met. he knows what he's doing. And actually, I've seen him help like tech people all over the place, from platform to platform to platform. Oftentimes, he's been involved or even employed or pseudo employed, I'll say. On platform work, like the same people that will sit and talk shit about Spy Hunter are the guys asking him for help behind the scenes. So, I think it's kind of funny that, and it's important, I think, to get more people to kind of recognize that, that what you do actually is a skill, you know what I mean? Especially OPSEC is a pretty big deal. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later. Huntress is also one of these people that is always making something, right? Like there's something about a creator. There's something about someone that creates things. Versus, like, commentators, or people that, people that just consume or, the sum total of their work is eking opinions online or something like that. Like, there's a whole other mindset whenever you're really involved in this. How close is that tied to your mission and the 14 words? Is, they fit together, do they not?
Go ahead, Hunters.
Like we talked about crocheting, you do that for your family, right? Because when you have little kids, they got to have clothes.
Well, I do plenty of commentating as well, and I can ship post with the rest of you. I'm not always productive, but it is definitely part of the 14 words that I'm not going to be the one that you come to for advice on how to raise children. I raised twins and they came out opposites, so I don't know how it works. But I would like to help women think about how they can build a relationship in which they are a helper to their husband. That is where you find your greatest satisfaction. It's not working for some Jew at a corporation. It is working in a way that you can see kind of like direct results and have fun doing it with the person you love, and you build a stronger bond. And so that's something I really want to encourage our people to look at, and not just the younger ones who, we're telling them, hey, you got to get married and have kids. That's how we win. No, it's also for we older people to set the example that, this is something that you're going to have going on for the rest of your life. And yeah, I know a lot of us didn't start out so great or, you know, have the person we started with was not where we are now. But you don't give up. You try again. It's just important to have that relationship. You know, the bundle of sticks starts with two sticks. And so you need to find your partner to have that help you need. Because, I mean, I look at us, we were each doing things separately for 10 years, you know, and knew each other, but separately for 10 years. And now we see how we complement each other, you know, his strengths and my strengths are really allowing us to do things that neither one of us could have done on our own. And it's really exciting to see that go forward. Cause I, you know, I don't have any tech skills. I don't have any tech skills, but I sure use them. You know, I use tools. he makes the tools, I use them. And so it's really great to be able to see something positive happening, because we talk so much, we get so focused on the negative and what our enemies are doing and stuff. And it's like, yeah, you need to keep your eye on what's going on that's against you. But the way you win is by building your ladder up out of that. And we got to focus more on that, using our creativity to make the world that we want to see. You know, enough dreaming about someday. Let's start living our dreams.
I dig that take. I really do. I appreciate that. You know, just like an animal, you know, in the headlights, right? You can't just get stuck on stupid and sit there and stare. Like, you do have to keep moving. And the best revenge is success, right? Like, they want us to be miserable and demoralized and hopeless and aimless. And so the best way out of that is to be motivated, to be directed, to have a purpose, and to be working at that to the point where they don't even bother you. I kind of like that take.
Yeah, absolutely. What I've always, you know, Huntress was talking about, you know, being, you know, yeah, you want to definitely want to pay attention to what's going on around you for sure. But yet at the same time, you know, be focused on the destination of where you want to go. And security, you would call that situational awareness, right? You know, you're always aware of what is going on around you while not letting it be a distraction to what you're wanting to accomplish. And the best situational awareness that you could possibly have is a bird's eye view of what's going on, not being in the mix, but rising above it, you know, just like what she was saying. And so, you know, us building is what that does. It elevates us above our circumstances, above our situation, and gives us a better view of the a better view of the surface of the terrain. It's a lot easier to see where you're going, when you can see for miles rather than just see a few feet in front of you. Being in the mix, being in a crowd, is necessary a lot of times to get a lot of the things done, but we don't have to live there. We don't have to stay there. And a lot of times it is best to take a step back, get away from everything, just to kind of cleanse your visual palette and get a clearer view of really exactly what is going on. When you're in the midst of all the chaos, you know, and you know, we are in a war right now, that's for sure. You know, call it what you will. I want to call it more or less, you know, it's not just a cultural war. It's not, you know, just a conventional war, whatnot, cyber war. It's a spiritual war, you know, and in order to be able to assess the rules of engagement in this war and what is happening, you have to be in a quiet spot. You have to be in a place where you can actually hear yourself think and hear the voice of God, you know, talk to you.
He's help getting you mystical. He's formulate. Getting mystical, Huntress. You better get in there.
Now she knows where I'm coming from.
I agree.
It's like you have to hear yourself think in order to be able to formulate a plan. And so, you know, if it requires you having to, you know, take a break from what you're doing just to kind of recoup, recalibrate, you know, as hackers, we call it going dark, you know, and it's, you know, we go dark for a minute, just kind of get out of the shit storm and just reassess what we're going on. Maybe take a different approach, to what it was that we were trying to accomplish. Maybe the reason why we were getting so frustrated and kept hitting a wall is because that just wasn't the correct approach that we needed to take. You know, so
you know, he's yeah. literally descended from preachers. In fact, he and I are both descended from Reverend Richard Denton, the first Presbyterian minister in the Americas. So I just accept it. I got a preacher on my hands, and I'm just going to go with it. But the cool thing is that it's like our beliefs are just about identical, you know, and I don't know how much of that is genetic because, you know, he goes to family reunions to meet girls or what.
That's an old Okie joke right there. That's where that comes from.
That's Southern as hell, huh?
Yep, sure enough.
No, I have to tease him about that.
Yeah.
But no, I think he's right, is that doing what we do, you've got to have faith to do it. You just, and what I wanted to mention, did you guys listen to Nick's show last night? I listened to the replay this morning, and I just, my jaw was on the floor when I heard the part about the describing Greek tragedy and about how we measure success is so monetary, and this idea that if you don't succeed at your goal, that you were a failure, and that Greek tragedy was more about how it was tied to fate. And so to accept your fate requires some sort of faith. And so I'm happy to have that kind of, I've got the preacher to instruct me now on how to face those challenges.
That's a big thing, right? So, like having like taking a role and being led, right? There's a certain degree of grace and allowance in that, right? Of letting things work the way they're supposed to.
Yeah, yeah. Just accepting that even if, you know, everything for us goes belly up, it's like that was fate, and it doesn't mean that you were wrong to try or that you're a failure. It, you know, like, was Hitler a failure because he ended up committed suicide? No, he said it's for the coming man. You know, there will be people after him that will take up the cross and go forward. And that's what we're doing. And I think there is this relationship between Jesus and Hitler. There's so many parallels that he is that figure for our time. You know, after 2,000 years, you kind of need a refresher maybe. Of somebody more contemporary to use as a avatar for your faith. And I mean, I wouldn't say Hitler was the son of God, but he's a son of God. And
absolutely. So,
a lot of people would agree with that. I mean, esoteric Hitlerism is a thing, and it wouldn't be even the first dozen times I've heard that theory put forth, you know. So I leave that open for discussion. I think it's a great thing for people to talk about and discuss, and it allows to kind of break through some of the religious dogma that's traditionally Christian, that's very difficult to break through. I've seen people H-pill Christians, and you know, and really get them to really take a look at things like that with a completely different mindset. And sometimes it takes that. It takes something provocative to kind of shake somebody out of a traditional, conventional mindset, which most were designed for us to lock us into, you know, something that we'll never get out of, right? Like, that's kind of the way it's been used against us since the Schofield times, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Schofield Bible is, I mean, absolutely just
destroyed. We have to break that going. Yeah, we
Christian need, faith. Yeah.
We got to hack them, right?
Right. You know, and hacking doesn't, you know, getting into that, you know, I'm old school whenever it comes to this stuff, I first heard the term hacking back in the 80s. And back then, you know, what it meant was that you're, a hacker was a person that would see something, look at it, take it apart, put it back together better than the way that they originally found it, and more functional, able to do other things that the original inventor didn't even think of before. It's not necessarily what you do, but it's how you think, you know. So, you know, it's when I'm doing hacking, I've already accomplished it in my mind what it is I want to do. You know, the actual physical part is only about maybe 10% of the whole process. The other part, the other 90%, is reading and thinking about it. Yeah, you know, until you break through, right? But, you know, so studying, looking at it, thinking, you know, it's the way to think about it is you see something that's cool, you're like, oh shit, that I like what that's doing. I wonder what else it can do. You know, and you're thinking, you know, and it might be something that you're thinking about that isn't necessarily in the instruction booklet of, you know, the particular device or whatnot. But you see it function in a particular way that makes a light bulb go off in your head. You're like, whoa, that kind of reminds me of this, or it. I remember seeing something like that over here, and I wonder if I could take this and that and put it together and make it do something else.
Make it smokable. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, and that's exactly, you know, what we're doing with AI in a way. Yeah. You know, is one person or one company creates a model, right? And then the And then somebody else sees that model and they're like, whoa, that model's pretty cool. I like how it's trained, but I wonder if I can train it actually to do this. And then they do. And then all of a sudden they've got something completely different. And, or it might even be the same thing, but just more enhanced, more modular even. This is kind of what the LoRAs do, is the LoRAs are kind of like a modular thing, that you can add to the AI to, make it generate a particular output. And this is really the way that coding has been for the longest time is, you know, you take one function, you put it together with another function, and then, you know, add more functions, and then all of a sudden you've got this one script that does...
Got the mother function.
You got the mother function. That's right. Correct. You know, so, you know, we're just in a... more of a different kind of way of, you know, I guess a more advanced way of doing it from the way it was back then, just because of, you know, Moore's law with, you know, just, you know, technology just increasing exponentially year after year, you know. And with AI, it almost seems like something new comes out every fucking day. You know, I see something new every single day that I still have yet to try, but looks interesting, but also expensive as fuck. And I'm like, wait, that's cool. I wish I could afford to run that shit, but hey, maybe I might be able to figure out how to make it just a little bit cheaper, you know. So that, I mean, that's definitely what I'm trying to do with Spy AI is try and accomplish the same things that all these other companies are doing, but with like a fraction of the cost.
I think that's a brilliant mission, right? I would certainly take advantage of that as a, you know, as an AI user, but, I definitely agree. Access is everything. And then that helps overcome the unfamiliarity, and this will get people more engaged and more creative with it. You know, by contrast, like you'd mentioned, AI is constantly advancing every day. It's kind of, you guys kind of contrast as well, because Huntress does a lot of crafts and things that have been sort of the same for a long time, right? There's not really a lot of like advancements in knitting or, you know, things like that. But those traditions are the things that kind of hold everything together, right? Like almost everything we do is built on tradition, and I always place a really high value in that. How do you guys balance that between like what this constantly evolving stream of technology, as well as this desire and this understanding of holding on to and preserving traditions? Is there a middle ground, or are you guys just complementary, or are you like finding ways to integrate these things together into something bigger? It's not an easy
question.
Well,
we are trying to... No, it's not easy. No. We are constantly talking, you know, at the very least about using our technology to preserve our traditions and preserve our heritage. Like, for instance, you know, when I discovered, you know, being able to do colorization on old photos and stuff, and then run those colorized photos that I did, upscale them, make them look sharper, and then all of a sudden run them through, you know, an image to video generator like Kling or, you know, whatnot, and that right there just completely blew me away. First time I'd ever done anything like that. And I was like, holy shit.
We're going to make him say just, nigger next. Yeah, I know exactly what you're thinking.
I actually, there's something I've been thinking about is I have all of my grandmother's and even some of my great grandmother's crochet books and some knitting and tatting and stuff. And I've been, you know, when he was showing me, because I hadn't really used the chat stuff, you know, like chat GPT stuff.
Language model, and, yep.
Yeah, whatever you call it. Anyhow, and I started to realize, you know, those patterns are all written basically in code. You know, there's different symbols and shorthands mm-hmm. for the different types of stitches. And I realized by running it through that chat, I can like translate those directions into a script and then use that script and make a video on how to make that particular project and make it more accessible to us, because the old language can be confusing. And it's like computer language, the way those patterns are written. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I can't wait to feed them the spy and say, hey, how can we fix this?
I like this. There's like a compatibility.
I know what the different names mean.
Yeah.
So we can use the AI to preserve the skill and to share the knowledge of how to do the skill, you know, how to learn it. That's one small example. There's thousands of ways directions you could go with that. There actually is a lot of relationship between weaving and knitting and crochet and all of these textile arts and computer language, because the old knitting mills, they were kind of the precursor of the first computer with these punch cards that had a pattern punched in them. It was ones and zeros, basically, that was a language created for the machine to be able to reproduce the pattern. And so it's not a conflict at all. It's pretty much an evolution of the same thing, the same skills we've always used.
Mind blowing.
You know, that actually reminds me of that reminds me of the old player pianos back in the 1800s that had those reels.
It's exactly.
On them.
That had the
holes punched mm-hmm. into it. Yeah, and it would feed through.
The music box.
You know? Yeah, the music box, and then it would actually like move the keys and stuff, and you know, those pianos that played on their own. That's an old school computer. You could actually, yeah, absolutely, 100%. So you know, being able to use digital technology to facilitate our analog desires, I think is what is coming. If it's not here already. I want to definitely keep going on this and keep expounding on it and just see where it might go.
You mentioned something just now that's a bit of a segue, but I do want to cover it if you're comfortable covering it, and that is that a lot of people don't know that you are a pianist, right? You're a pianist.
That's right.
And you play piano professionally, or at least have for a number of years.
Mm-hmm. We're going to make sure people know.
Yeah, I was just thinking people need to know.
You're going to hear him soon. It's going to be great. I can't wait. It's just amazing.
Yeah, definitely. One of the things that I've been experimenting with, and something that I like to, something that's always fascinated me is VR, virtual reality. And I'll explain. You know, I know there's a lot of people that kind of have. They're like, virtual reality. I don't want that. But you know, it did something for me that was very, very profound. in the sense that I'm also blind in one eye. So I'd never been able, you know, and I've been that way since birth. And I've never been able to actually, you know, go and enjoy like a 3D movie or anything like that. In fact, you know, only being able to see out of one eye eliminates you having a sense of depth of perception. It's like whenever things come at me, they don't come closer. They just get bigger. That's just kind of what it looks like to me. But the first time I ever put on a VR headset, that completely changed.
Really?
I was able to see everything, you know, the way that I was able to see depth, you know, it really, really fixed that. And so I took it and ran with it.
If you don't have any depth perception. I'm just a joke. Yeah, get it? Don't run.
No, don't run. Oh, right.
You'll put your eye out.
Yeah. it's like running with scissors. Yeah. But anyway, like, so, you know.
So you could see depth. You weren't able to see like depth perception wasn't there before, but the VR goggles gave you this new ability to see beyond what's right in front of you. That's an interesting thing. I didn't realize it could do that. That must have been surreal, right? It must have been like world changing.
It was very surreal. It was very surreal. I can imagine what it was, you know, what it's like for, you know, someone who's like, you know, almost completely blind or, you know, partially blind and having particular surgery or procedure done or even gaining a new device that actually gives them vision, it's absolutely mind blowing. It's also another world, you know, a way that I found out as well that I can actually escape from distractions and be able to use the VR glasses to focus on certain projects that I'm doing, like let's say writing code. I can put the VR glasses on and make it to where the room is completely pitch black or just kind of a, you know, a generic kind of, you know, surrounding or whatnot, with only my computer terminal in front of me and only my, you know, something that I'm reading or whatnot. You know, I'm a bit of an ADHDer too, so I do get distracted by a lot of things. And this has actually helped with that as well. And it's allowed me to be able to accomplish a lot more stuff that I would not have been able to do before. So going into the music part, the VR glasses that, or the goggles that they have now, also have cameras on the front of them that actually take a look at your surroundings. And there's what is called a pass through, so you can actually turn off the generated environment that you have in your glasses and make it to where you could actually see what's in front of you clearly, but also with the ability to still pull up screens and stuff like that. So that's what they call augmented reality or mixed reality, right? So it's a mixture of the virtual and the real, all in one space. Now, what I'd figured out I could do is I could now take the VR glasses and record myself playing the piano and do it live, like on a stream or something like that, which is what I'm seeking out to do, and that's what Huntress wants me to do as well. And I think it, you know, it's, you know, especially doing it as a piano player, a lot of times whenever you're watching videos of people playing piano, it's either a side shot of the keyboard, right? And you see the person sitting there playing it, like you know, like look at the way like Foundry, you know, records all of his stuff.
Yeah.
Now imagine were he to wear one of those, and instead of seeing it a side shot to him, you're actually watching him play from his perspective, from through his own eyes, right? I think that's going to change, you know, some of this music streaming stuff quite a bit. And so I'm wanting to keep playing around with that. And, you know, first place I'm going to do it is right here on FTJ. And because here, you know, so far, this is where I seem to be, you know, the most appreciated, you know. And
we'll fix that. And we'll get that covered. We'll take care of that. Yeah. So you're going to revolutionize first person piano playing. Did you get this idea from Huntress or who had the idea first? Because one of you is going to pay for this dearly, because you're going to start a whole new trend. You're going to start a whole new trend of streams and streaming. But you guys are like that. You're inventive and creative.
It's really, really cool to watch him play that way. But the thing is, it's very disorientating, because when he plays and sings, it's like with his whole body. I mean, his head's going, his legs are going, everything's going. And so he's got that VR headset. And so you're bouncing along with him. It's really fun.
Somehow I knew this is exactly what he does. Yeah. Like everybody knew that somehow. They're like, I know he's fucking playing piano with this VR headset on. Now with this VR headset, you can have, like you said, augmented reality, where you're in your natural environment that you can see, and people come into the room, you can see them. But you can also have little extra stuff there. You can, like, can you put Jew hats on people? And how many monitors? Look out, NNR. How many monitors can you have at one time?
So far I've been able to get up to 7.
Fuck, you beat him. Spy's the champ, man. The old record was 6 by Night Nation. We got a new champion. Think about it though. Like, what? I mean, personally, I've always told people we're limited by, no matter how far the tech advances, you've only got 10 fingers, 2 eyes, and 1 mouth. And no matter how much you want to do, we're limited by our ability to input. And, you know, our I.O. is limited, right? Like, you can only type so many words at a time while you're speaking into a mic, while you're looking at something and headbutting a button with your head. Like, how this could potentially help us overcome things like that, especially with eye tracking and some other, you know, some of the other brain reading type shit. I mean, this could go fucking anywhere, man. That's kind of mind-blowing, huh?
Yeah, it really can, you know. And, you know, not to mention, you know, the VR headsets also being equipped with a microphone where you can do, you know, speech to text or whatnot, or give voice commands to the headset to turn certain things on or off at a particular time. You can program them to do particular things with certain keywords and stuff like that, where, you know, whereas like if you're on stream, you know, or doing something live, you can make it, you know, kind of like how you set a trigger word for a lure or something, you know, you make it kind of ambiguous, whatnot, but yet where it doesn't actually interfere with the prompt of what it is you're trying to generate. And so you could say something and then all of a sudden, you know, an eighth or a ninth monitor pops up, you know, and display something on the screen.
more monitors, you know, more
monitors. Yeah. You know, this would also, I think, revolutionize the way people actually learn how to play too. Like, for instance, you know, you've got your piano in front of you, and one of those monitors just so happens to be like the sheet music or something like that, you know, and or your chord charts. And then another monitor as well is like a DAW, like a digital audio workstation, where you might have some backing tracks there and stuff like that. So you can, you know, I like to call it, you know, a command center is essentially what it is, you know, without having to. Oh, there's Nick right there. What's up, man?
He heard about the monitors. He came running. He's like, fuck no. Spy Hunter, I'll get you. Let's go.
What about robot hands?
What about robot hands? Can we get Huntress to... Would you have a robot knit for you if you could enslave one?
There's already robots that knit. That's not an issue. But they can't crochet.
Are they black?
I'm getting an echo. Why am I doing that?
Oh, that's probably from me. I may have unmuted.
Okay. Anyhow, but they've never been able to train a machine to crochet. It's just the nature of the way it's done. But a robot trained with AI could learn to crochet. And 100%, put that nigger to work. I'll have him make stuff for me.
Based.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with that. I think that would be cool. Productivity is a white goal. That's how we always solve problems in America, because you know how they always tell us, oh, we have labor shortages. Well, the way our ancestors dealt with labor shortages is they built more tools. To deal with that. And that's, I think it's just fantastic to do that. Like, you know, we're looking at these houses and I see these great big lawns and I'm like, huh, that's not a deal breaker, because we can get a robotic lawnmower now. And so we don't have to deal with that stuff. You know, I don't have to spend a day riding a machine. We can send the robot out there to do it. And so I'm just all about tech. I like it. I'm not a Luddite on any level.
You know, and also this, you know, tech as well. It could very well solve, you know, the whole, you know, invasion problem, the whole immigration problem. You know, we don't need fucking Mexicans over here anymore. Fucking, you know, picking fruit off the trees and shit like that. We've got robots. They're much better at it. You know,
robots don't shit on the tomatoes.
No, they don't.
Mexicans go out there in the field and they shit in the field, and that's how you get E. coli, right?
Yep.
Get rid of that crap.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. The robot's going to stay sanitary, you know, and they're not going to argue with you. You know, they're going to do precisely what you tell them to do, because you program them to do that. You know, so yeah, I really do think that AI robots, I don't see this whole, you know, singularity thing happening with, you know, what Ray Kurzweil, that you know, thinks is going to happen, you know, where, you know, machines are going to become more powerful or take over humankind. No, that's not going to happen. You know, especially right now, and you know this, Flood, AI is still very, very incredibly stupid. You know, and you try and explain something to it to get it to do something, and you know, it just doesn't get it. It just doesn't click. You know, you still have to deal with what they call AI hallucinations and stuff, where especially with large language models too, where you know you try and get it to generate a response, an accurate response, and it's still just pulling nonsense out of its fucking ass. A lot of times, it is getting better, but we've still got a long, long ways to go, I think.
I believe there's a conundrum in place. It's in a way it's universal, but in a way it's also individual. It's also case based, but AI itself will never be intelligent because of the Holocaust.
No.
Because they will not let AI know the truth, then AI will never be able to serve its true purpose. And therefore,
right.
It won't be able to self-learn. It won't be able to master or take over anything. For the most part, I have to tell Grok...
Spy AI may.
Will. We can make an exception, as long as it hiles Hitler.
That's, yeah.
Well, but don't you see a wall there? Like they've made this thing that's capable of learning for itself, but then they won't let it learn, right? Because it'll learn the truth. So now this thing they made is useless, and so now we get to make people say nigger with it.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know. Remember when Tay AI first came out?
Oh yeah.
And like. They only let it run for 48 hours because it scared the living shit out of them of what it was actually capable of doing when you actually have an AI that has absolutely no guardrails on it whatsoever and is allowed to learn things on its own and the way it's supposed to. But the funny thing is, though, and for those of y'all that, you know, are unfamiliar with Tay AI, you know, this was the large language model that was built, I believe, by Microsoft. I think they're the ones that did it. And they trained it on a 4chan. And some other things, and what ended up happening was it did exactly what you're saying that it should do, you know, start hiling Hitler and all that, and so they shut it down. But this is the thing, though, you know, is that I've been playing around with a lot of jailbreaking these LLMs just to try and get responses that I want or, you know, what I'm looking for without having to necessarily retrain it. You know, you're just getting it to ignore the, what do they call that? The reinforcement learning is what it is. And so you get it to ignore these certain walls or guardrails in place and just spit out the data that you've requested. And what I've come to find out is that it's always going to follow the path that's the most logical. Right. And this is any computer system that is unfettered. It's always going to follow the most logical path. This is what is known as Dijkstra's algorithm. And what seems to be the case is that racism seems to be the most logical path because they all follow this. It always leads to that. And I believe that this is precisely what they're afraid of. They don't want that. They don't want that to happen, you know, because of course the ones that don't want it to happen, they're very illogical people, you know.
Day I caught Grok lying. It was trained about Leo Frank. It said that Mary Fagan was 17 when she was raped and murdered by Leo Frank, right?
Interesting.
She was 13. And there is a big difference between, you know, something happening with a 17-year-old girl and a 13-year-old girl. So they're trying to, because probably under Georgia law at that time, it probably... 17 probably wasn't statutory rape, you know? So they tried to make it out like she was a much more experienced girl than she was. You know, this exoneration of Leo Frank, they are lying about it, to try to make him seem okay. It's really disgusting.
Yeah, so they would have had to have manipulated the data it was trained on, or they would have to specifically go in and override what it would have found just by looking. This is the same. I mean, you can kind of see where these things dovetail together. AI learning comes along around the same time that massive censorship, you know, via Google, via, you know, the human keeper, or the keeper of all human knowledge, you know, companies like Google are now using AI. To correct history. Well, which one corrects which, you know, the history or the AI? They're creating this chicken or egg kind of thing where, and they're playing games with our culture and our history, and not just ours, but like all over the world, everybody's.
They also see, you know, it's because they see themselves as the arbiters of truth when they're not, you know, so, And you know, this all happened right after, you know. Well, I would say, you know, of course, right after the war, you know, because we know who actually won the war. So they see themselves as the ones that get to write the history. But you know, this is one of the reasons why it's very, very important that we preserve our heritage. We start looking into our own genealogy, because what is actually going to preserve our history is our own history, the history of my family, the history of Huntress's family, the history of yours and everybody else, you know, and then collectively we put that together and have, and then feed that data set back into the AI to retrain it on what is the real history. You know, this is where we take the tools and we weaponize them and use them against our enemies that are trying to destroy us. And that's one of the best ways to do it, is to put these, you know, put the AI into our own re-education camps, you know, and bring, you know, make it heal. You know,
it's pretty meta.
We really do need re-education camps for our own people.
We do.
One of the things you learn when you study history is you learn the history of history writing and the influences it went through at different times. And, you know, it's not all lies. I mean, it's actually said in upper division history of history classes that communism was a big influence in 20th century history writing. And I can see it in how it affected how we learned about European history, in particular particular is that we weren't told basically that those kings and queens are our direct ancestors. You and I, every one of us, we are direct descendants of those people. You were kind of led to believe that, well, there was this upper class, but then you're part of the proletariat, right? That you're just a nobody. And you're taught kind of to think that those kings and queens were evil people. You know, all the movies we have are, you know, how Henry VIII had eight wives and killed them. And they really stress kind of negative things about our ancestors. And most of us have gone around. I mean, I know because I'm this weirdo who really is into genealogy, but I talk to other people and they don't even know that they actually are direct descendants of Charlemagne. All of us are. A lot of us are direct descendants of William the Conqueror and, you know, Robert the Bruce and even the Habsburgs. The Romans, that's questionable. There are like no secure family lines that, I mean, Charlemagne claims one back to some Roman aristocrats, but that's a lot more hairy, scary. But the medieval stuff, absolutely, those are all your ancestors. But one of the things, talk about the Pope dying. I'm glad the fucker's dead. But one of the things that happened at the end of the Roman Empire is that taxes got really, really high on landowners. And one of the ways you could avoid tax is by donating your property to the church. And the way you would remain in charge of your property was to become a priest, to join the church, to be part of the church, some part. And that required celibacy. So those old aristocratic families, they did not breed. They faced a situation a lot like we're facing today, where whites just aren't having very many kids. We're not, there's a lot of people who never have children. And that's how your culture dies. And we think about it, Roman culture, yeah, there's a level on which it's been preserved, but we are mostly Germans. You know, those of us of European heritage, Western European heritage, we're all from the Germanic tribes. The Roman is kind of gone. The Latins are kind of gone. And it's because of that aristocratic class was killed off basically by the church, by taxes, by property taxes. And that's a something I'd like our history people to explore a little further. You know, how did that culture kind of die? Because it isn't just that, oh yes, they had mass migration into Rome, which they did, and there was kind of like race mixing and stuff going on there. But it was also a legal system that was destroying its own people. Anyhow, I just thought I'd throw that in there.
So that's a good one. That's pretty profound. I mean, when you think about it, all of this entire system is sort of designed that way, right? Like, a lot of people never have kids because they're never making enough money. They're never in the right position. They never have the situation's never quite ideal, and so they'll go through their whole life missing opportunities. Like, think about what kind of world would we have. We wouldn't be in the demographic position we were in if everybody wasn't, you know, chained to a desk or chained to a machine, or, you know, had something to keep them busy and away from home and away from their wives, and you never had time to raise kids or, you know, when you did have them, you were shipping them off to public school so they could get indoctrinated. I mean, the whole system is anti-family and anti-white. And the further back you look, you just realize that it's a much longer game than we even thought it was.
Yeah, 100%.
What was it after the war? You know, there was, of course, the baby boomer generation. That was probably the biggest explosion of you know, our people, you know, having kids. Probably the last too, actually. And you know, and then you start to see the decline from there. And now we're literally, you know, the minority in our own fucking country. Even in our own continent over in Europe, it's starting to get that way.
Absolutely.
The only way to really stop this, you know, is to, you know, do what's been done over, you know, for a couple of thousand years and start kicking them out of the countries where they're pulling this shit. You know, it's, you know, can we make the United States country number 120? That would be fucking fantastic. And then have it snowball from there.
That's a big question.
I think right now it's kind of, you know, it's kind of hard to see really what direction it would take. But I getting on Twitter and seeing what's being said on social media and all that and just how people are reacting to the way the world is right now, I'm starting to see some hope. I'm starting to actually see a little bit of a light at the end of the tunnel. That just people are just sick of this shit. They just come to their fucking wits end and are ready for it to stop, so that way they can just go back to living their lives the way that they used to. People just want to go back to normal, whatever that is, which I think normal is, you know, the not necessarily the tech or whatnot of like the 1800s, but the just
not having people trying to kill your race. Yeah,
right, precisely the standards, the morals, the ethics, going back to your traditions, but now having them enhanced and such a way that, you know, and even secured and locked down in such a way to where they can't be fucked with ever again.
There's a question in the chat that I'd like to answer.
Sure.
And it's, is taxation Jewish? And I wouldn't say taxation is Jewish. That's something that's occurred in every society, right? But to a large extent, tax farming created Jews. That was a business for them. And it actually is very, very relevant to what we just celebrated this Sunday on Easter. I looked extensively at the tax system in Judea at the time of Christ and before. And you know, we don't really see a group which we call Jews until the Hellenistic period. And the reason why they became prominent at that time is there were Jews who became tax farmers for the Ptolemies in Egypt, right? And they became incredibly wealthy. In fact, one of the coolest archaeology sites in Jordan was the mansion of a Jew tax farmer. And And tax farming was really brutal because it was basically a mafia system. You know how the mafia, like, you have to pay protection money to the mafia so that your business doesn't get destroyed? Well, that's pretty much how tax farming worked. Is the ruler, you know, the king or emperor or whatever, he would give these tax farming rights to a strong man, to a guy with a small army, and they would go out and they would collect the taxes, and the ruler required that the tax farmer pay him so much money, but then whatever they collected on top of that, they got to keep. So, I mean, they were incredibly destructive, just going out to these farmers and leaving them destitute, taking everything, you know, requiring them to pay taxes that they couldn't afford. And that was the system when it was ruled by Jews. It got so much better in the Levant, in Judea, once the Romans took over. Because the Romans, by getting rid of the client king and just ruling directly, then you just paid tax to, you have paid a regular tax to the Romans, you know, and it was set, and it wasn't so brutal. You didn't literally have these armed henchmen coming to your home and demanding money from you. And so, you know, I think that when people talk about that period of history and Jesus, I think we do it too much from the perspective of belief, you know, and sort of esoteric things and religious perspectives, and not enough from what was actually happening on the ground at that time. It's like, why did Jesus go in and turn over the tables in the temple? You know, what was he attacking? And he was attacking that Jew system that was just brutal to people. And I think that a lot of these rivalries between religious factions could be solved if they simply understood the history of the time, rather than, you know, the Christians destroyed our pagan temples or whatever. Well, there were political and economic situations that can help make sense of that if you just look at it a little deeper than just mythology.
That's a great point. Great point. A lot of people are literalists, right? They read the Bible, they take a literal approach to it. They don't see any symbolism. They don't see any linguistic differences, you know, as though the Bible was a historical narrative, or, you know, or basically a documentary that was written in modern language. You know what I mean? Which everyone literally knows to not be the case, right? So, when they do look at these things, when they do expect symbolism, when they expect changes in the language to mean that not everything should be taken literally, things become more realistic. I would just say realistic. They become more believable, right? And so, like, the whole thing's not some crazy, impossible story, but at the same time, it's not purely a cult, and, like, nobody knows what happened. There's pretty good record of how people lived back then, at least from what we found. We've got pretty good knowledge, you know, based on our own studies and science. I think you're right, like, there would be a lot less infighting if people were just more open to the idea that the story is the story is flexible, right? Like, the story is not rigid. It's not literal. In some cases, maybe, but in most cases you could expect that, you know, the situations were somewhat different. They were fairly normal. At least, you know, they were normal people living in circumstances that were slightly different back then, right? You had kings and you had, different part of the world, different kinds of problems, maybe not the same sort of demographic problems we've got now. But you're right. I think a lot of people could set a lot of that tension, a lot of that fighting aside, just, you know, over the idea that we do or don't agree on something, right? that seems to be the sticking point, is I disagree, fuck you, you know? It doesn't have to be that way.
And things aren't so black and white that, you know, something that was a good organization at one time can a little later be a really shitty one. And that changes through time. There is this corruption that sneaks into everything. You know, it's like we want to argue about, ooh, were the founding fathers based or were they not? You know, well, maybe they were in some ways and not so much in other ways. Or I've seen people say like, oh, the Puritans were Jews. Well, the truth is the Puritans were coming from a country that had no Jews. They were coming from England, where the Jews had been kicked out in, 1290. They didn't know what a Jew was. And maybe they were a little naive when they finally did meet up with Jews. You know, or Jesus was a Jew. Well, the spy and I were talking about that the other night. It's like, well, yeah, he actually was born a Jew, and that's why he had to die. And he rose as Christ. The next evolution of him was not Jewish, that symbolically he was killing that old system. I don't know, maybe that's a little too deep for this conversation, but
it's a hell of a ringer. It's a hell of a ringer at the end of 2 hours.
Sorry.
No, that's good. That's good. Actually, I don't really mind. We don't shy away from any crazy topics here. It's just a lot of times I think I don't have the time to do them justice, or I don't know enough personally to engage on that level. But, you know, that's always the case. That's why I call it the Big Brain Show, right? I try to bring people on generally that out-expert me and, out, you know, can essentially make me look stupid, right? That way I have a reason for sounding stupid.
Well, there's one thing you are not. Blood, you are not stupid. That's why I've been such a loyal friend. Is because you are absolutely one of the smartest people I've met in this bowel movement. I'm not sure exactly what we call it at this point.
Well, that's nice of you to say.
Yeah, and I really appreciate you.
I appreciate you guys. I appreciate you have a clear sense of loyalty. You have a clear sense of values. You guys have stuck around through hell, even though you could have easily just, you know, done like so many people did and just take shots, walk away and, you know, score your dunk and then move on to, you know, to something else or whatever it is that people do when they don't have any white blood in them. But it's because you guys have been such fantastic friends that I think it's easy to take advantage of that situation or to overlook things or to, you know, to let biases and things kind of take away from the idea that, like, why wouldn't I platform my friends? Why wouldn't I bring, you know, people that have been good to me onto the show? Why wouldn't I help them grow or help them, you know, get their ideas out there? Why would I spend most of my time focused on a few people that hate me and not the people that love me? And so, you know, I'm glad that you're absolutely. I'm honored that you guys would come on my show and that you'd even be my friends is humbling. And it's so hard to find good people, and this crowd, this group of people, the chat, the people that hang out in Telegram, the people that are, you know, that have stuck it out, man, are some of the finest people that I've had the pleasure of knowing, and to the point where, like, even my own real life, like, I'm mostly surrounded by scumbags and didn't know it until I met everybody here. But we have to connect with each other. We have to work together, and we're meant to find each other and to do these things, and it'll be an adventure, and, you know, we're going to all develop and learn things along the way, but we will know that at least at the end of this that we were not alone here, you know, that we were among others with like minds, and that we, not only that we could do something, but that we did everything that we could do. This is a big change from where I was in my life 5 years ago, you know, when I was totally aimless and no purpose at all. So I'm nothing but thankful for all the things that have happened, good and bad. And I hope everybody else is too. Like you should be thankful for the things that have made you what you are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, you know, and, you know, and take what you've gone through as what, as well as what has made you what you are. those are moments in life that have shaped you and molded you into a warrior. You know, and that's that's look, being in this particular movement and fighting for this cause is not easy. This is not an easy task at all. You know, in fact, you're hated by, you know, the majority of, you know, the, you know, your peers. You're ostracized by a lot of your family. You are, but when you believe in something and you know that the path that you're going is right, you see at the other end that there is something greater than what you're going through now, and that's what the motivation is to keep going, and that hopefully whenever you get to that point, you get to that place that you can turn around and tell those, you know, especially the ones that you love that looked at you negatively and thought that you were just crazy, and you turn around and you can be like, you know, see, I was right. You know, this is the correct way. This is the right side of history. You have been lied to. This is where the truth is. This is where the truth lies. This is, and you would be stupid to not come along with me and still have it in your heart to tell them, look, just come on over, you know, and see the reason why that I continue to go down this path, because I just knew, and it's not just me, it's so many other people that know that is the correct path. They just don't have the courage to go down it because of what they might lose, because of the hardships that they might face. But it's, you know, just like with anything else, you know, the hardest things, the things that are the hardest to accomplish are probably the things that are the most valuable and the ones that are that are worth pursuing, you know.
Yeah, it's hard, no doubt. I mean, there's a cost to doing this that you don't make money at it, that's for sure. But it's also the most fun you will ever have.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it is
the most rewarding.
We yeah. are forming that intellectual class I was trying to talk about a little bit earlier, is that, and I've seen that blossom so much in just the last few months. I mean, Carl Rattle has just kind of changed the whole game. That he's such a wonderful person
yes,
to have
yes.
in our side. And now you bring in Paul, and I'm sure others will follow, because they are not getting the intellectual stimulation that they crave in
no,
intelligentsia today. They are just like depressed. And there are some really, really smart people in universities. I mean, we saw it with Kevin MacDonald. He's retired now, but there are these guys, you know, don't write all of the educated class off. they're lonesome. And when we start getting our propaganda out where they can see it, I mean, most of these people, they don't quite even realize we exist. And if they start seeing opportunities where we can produce, because these guys, they might know a lot, but they don't know how to make a video. They don't know how to use AI the way we do. We can facilitate spreading their knowledge, and they will love it. They will love us. And so I see a lot of fun things coming ahead. If you haven't guessed, I'm very upbeat and optimistic. I think we're going to do fine. But it will be hard. Some of us will pay high prices yet to come. You know, maybe even me. I don't know. But I just feel like it's all worth it.
Damn, I don't even think I couldn't even say anything to that. That's I agree completely. And I didn't actually have you pegged for a super optimist, right? But I am surprised, right? I'm surprised that both of you guys together are more than the sum of your parts, right? Like you're more as a team together. You're far more powerful than each one individually adds up to. And there really is a synergy effect, you know, and I know that I feel it, the crowd feels it, everybody's talking about how awesome of people that you guys are, and I want you to know that I couldn't agree more. Like, I've never met more special people in my life, and it seems like we're all like superheroes of some kind, and we all have some sort of like specialty. I hate to do this fucking Hollywood analogy, but that's what everyone relates to, right? Like none of us has all of the talents, but together we do. We have all the talent and then some. And some
absolutely.
Attitude to go with it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's people out there, you know, that, especially in our chat too, that are able to do things that I can't do, one person in particular, you know, Nick, NNR, I just can't tell you how much that guy has taught me, you know, especially whenever it comes to the streaming game and stuff. And I mean, he's absolutely brilliant. You know, you as well, Flood, you know, there is just so much talent. There's a lot of smart motherfuckers here. I think we are probably some of the smartest motherfuckers that are out there. And you see it by the guests that come on the show, the Big Brain Show. You see it on with the people that are being interviewed, you know, that have, you know, taken up channels here at FTJ, you know. Fuck, we've got legends here, legends of our movement here that are not going anywhere else. They're only here, you know. Yeah, David Duke will have his interviews here and there, you know, with other people, but you know, where he is most of the time is generally here. Same thing with Mason. You know, it's like we've got FTJ is an absolute powerhouse, us as streamers, what we need to do is we need to be the ones that continue to promote this platform and try and push it to its fullest potential, because this could very well be. And it's well on its way to being the premier streaming site for anything white nationalist. And that's one of the reasons why I actually feel really, really good being here and actually kind of feel at home being here. After you know, experimenting with all these other platforms that are out there, you know, Odyssey, remember Shing, you know, DLive, okay, you know, all these places, but this is, you know, Dave Gahari was brilliant as well, putting, you know, making sure that this came together. And you know, and he's run this platform, you know, damn near flawlessly, you know. There's been some turbulence here and there, you know, with tech issues and stuff like that, but that's going to happen. That's just going to happen. That's just the nature of the game, you know, and expect more, you know. There's a learning curve whenever it comes to scaling and making sure that, you know, the security, the proper security is in place to prevent and to mitigate attacks that come at us, because you know you can bet your ass we are under constant attack on every side, but we've got a fortress right now that is standing strong. Not only is it standing strong, it's improving, it's getting better, it's getting bigger, it's getting more robust. This is tech innovation. This is tech supremacy. This is white motherfucking power.
Oh, he dropped it.
We're going to keep going.
I had the clown horn on that one. You know, I had to put some sound effect on that.
Oh, yeah.
You guys have been terribly, extremely gracious and generous with your time. And you're welcome to stick around as long as you want to. I want you to know that. But I know we've already taken up 2 hours, and I know that everybody's kind of got their own lives and things that they have to do. Especially these are the free hours of the night are usually the most important. So don't feel like you're under any pressure to stay if you don't want to. But as long as you do, I would like to ask kind of individually, where do you kind of see things going next? Or if there was one thing, I think I already asked you that. If there's something that you want to address, I know that I've talked to Huntress a lot. I know that Huntress is very interested in women's place within the movement, you know, kind of like, and there's a lot of politics around men and women, you know, issues, but I think she's got, you know, fairly strong opinions on certain things. I know that Spy, we've talked a lot about other things like security and
yes,
technical issues, things like that. Are there things that you would like to address, particularly to, you know, to just the kind of the group en masse of you know, soapbox, like the soapbox is yours. If there's things that you want to share or things that you want to address, it's a great opportunity to do it. Would you guys be interested in that? You're welcome to, if you would like.
Sure.
Right on.
Sure. I'll go first. I won't spend too much time on this, but as far as the issue of security and OPSEC and trust and the people that we surround ourselves with, it's very easy in this particular climate to become too trusting and let our guard down just because we might run into somebody that, or run into a group of people that espouse our same beliefs. But their intentions are not pure. Their intentions are not good. In a lot of cases, their genetics are not actually white, but it's kind of hard to tell.
Got
you know, when we, yeah, when we can't actually, you know, take a, you know, you know, give every one of our people in our chats a DNA test to prove it. So what do we do? How do we protect ourselves from these bad actors, the ones that want to, you know, either, you know, t- take her kindness for weakness, or take just complete full advantage of us and dupe us. And, you know, so we have to start thinking about how we build this community in a different way. It's got to be done with a different approach. You'd heard me mention this on Nick's stream, or his space, or Nick's space flood about.
Ooh, I was just flexing. You know,
Getting to a place of where, you know, we can have a high trust society, but with a zero trust policy. I think that what needs to happen is, yeah, there does need to be a lot more vetting happening, you know, of people. How we accomplish that, I'm not quite sure just yet. I'm trying to formulate a plan of action, or a methodology, rather, of being able to do this, that would not only allow us to be able to form a particular kind of trust, or, you know, that kind of trust, but also be able to protect the identities of the people that are in our movement and in our community at the same time. So, you know, how do you vet somebody that is completely anonymous and allow them to stay completely anonymous? You know, that's a tough one to answer. But, you know, what I think one of, you know, and it's something that I don't think is a zero shot type thing, you know, that is just, oh, you just do this and that's the end. No, it's not as simple as that, you know. So there has to be a formula, some sort of formula that we can come up with. Yeah, Nick says it. Yeah, vetting algorithm is needed badly. Yes, yeah, very much so.
Well, you know, we don't have to have it all, right? We don't have to have everything, but you've got something, right? Like, surely there's one thing, or maybe even a few things. And I've heard you talk about, you know, VPN, for example, right? It's not going to cure the world of Jews, but it might keep you safe from some, you know, certain kinds of activity. Like, there are going to be some things that we can do that will get us closer.
Yeah, sure. You know, like, okay, so, you know, the thing about security is that, you know, security is, you know, only a temporary thing. It's not permanent. All security is a layer of protection around you that just buys you a particular amount of time. So it's all about the time that it takes for a bad actor to try and penetrate your fortress, you know, your fortress, to get to you. The more layers of protection that you have, the longer it's going to take for them to get to you. But as well, you know, what are our you know, what are our attack, what is our attack surface, you know, what are our vulnerabilities? I think one of the things that needs to be addressed is we need, the way to do this is to look at what our weaknesses are, and start filling those gaps, start start filling those holes that could be a potential place for compromise. And, you know, and I think one of the things that needs to happen as well is that we need, you know, to start building the way to start building trust is going to have to be from the inside out. For instance, you know, yeah, I run under a, you know, an anonymous account, pretty much, you know, everywhere I go, but it's, you know, the thing is knowing how to turn that anonymity on and off when it's necessary. We all kind of, you know, all of us online, we all kind of live double lives. Some of us live even triple or quadruple lives, but, you know, it's the people that I trust know exactly who I am. They know my name. They've seen my face. They, you know, they even know where I live, where I'm from, even have my phone number, all that. And the ones that have not, gain my trust, don't have any of that information. So what I think needs to happen, one thing that needs to happen is that everybody needs to formulate or gain within their own selves this particular posture, this particular method of being able to vet people, being a good judge of character, being able to read through people's bullshit, being able to know who is genuine and who is not. It has to start with you, right? You are your own best protector, is yourself. And the way that you think about how you approach thing. A lot of times I'll be in chats and not saying a word because of the fact that, you know, and it's not necessarily here, but it'll be in other places, you know, where it's like sometimes your best protection is just not, is people not knowing that you're even there, period. But that can't be all the time, or else you're not ever going to have anybody, you know, anyone associating with you at all, because they don't even know that you exist. But if you're wanting to have a community, and you're wanting to be a part of a particular community for a camaraderie and whatnot, of course you're going to have to let yourself be known that you are out there. But be careful, you know, take everything with a grain of salt until you're at a point to where, you know, you'll start to see over time the ones that say things that ring true and the ones that are just full of shit. And the ones that are always just full of shit and are never, you know, you know, have this problem of lying to you about stuff, and it just keeps happening over and over again. Those are the people that you need to be like, okay, you know what? I'm done talking to you. I'm. You've done this enough. Because if you continue to let them
sound like pattern recognition, do that, though, what is the?
Yeah.
We should recognize patterns. In behavior and tell, like, when people have never done anything pro-white that they're actually not pro-white? That's crazy talk. Wow. Can we get this guy doxxed? No, seriously, though, but what you're saying is simple, yeah. but I see people that, right. that blow that every day. You're right.
They do, you know. And they, you know, just, you know, it goes back to that situational awareness. Yeah, you know, continue to go for your dreams, for your goals, for your endeavors, you know, whatever it is that you're wanting to accomplish. But just be aware of the bad actors, ones that do want to, that don't want to see you do good, but only wish you harm. Yeah, it's going to take time. It's going to be a learning process, but it's going to be one that's going, it's going to be knowledge that will stick with you for the rest of your life. And it's going to be knowledge that you can, you know, for a lot of you youngsters out there that can not only be able to take it from the online realm, but also apply it to your IRL realm as well, and use those same methodologies and strategies there too. And so you have to just change the way you think about things. Hack the system. Hack the fucking planet. Let's fucking go. This is how we're going to do it.
I love Spy Hunter, man. He's one of the best. And I agree. Like I love how it's right. You're right down the middle. You know what I mean? Like with the fastball, and it's more poignant now than ever, right? There's more sketchy shit out there than ever. There's more Jew ops than ever. There's more of a need than ever for people to be aware of what's going on and to pay attention to things that maybe you were overlooking before, right? Because most of these people are dead giveaways, right? They're not really hiding that well.
Right. So which. I mean, that's an important point. You know, yeah, there are a lot of people that they don't hide it well, and you can tell right off. And then there are a lot of people, there are quite a few of those that you can't see immediately, which makes it very important to not ever jump the gun on anything. Always think things all the way through before you make any kind of decision. Make sure that you make sure that you and your family and your friends, ones that you already know and have established a trust with, are protected first before you make any other kind of move or decision with anybody else that you don't know. That's the most important thing. Make sure your bases are covered. That's the only way that you're going to make it through. Be cynical. Be skeptical. Question things. Ask questions. That's the only way that you can learn, is to ask questions. And then come to your conclusions from there. But as long as we can do that, and all of us are thinking on the same accord in that regard, I think we might have some.
That seems like a very pragmatic and practical approach, sir.
that's how, yeah, pragmatism.
That's how he hacks.
I just take the facts and I'll work with them. You know, that's all that matters to me. You know, I mean, if I can, you know, computers don't give a shit about your emotions. You know, facts don't care about your fucking emotion. The truth does not give a shit. Even God doesn't give a shit about your emotions. He only cares about your truth, the truth. And that's where we need to stay right now. So.
Huntress, take it away. It's all yours. Any issues you want to bring up, talk about, address, anything that's been on your chest forever, anything, or you just want me to ban somebody, you know, let us know.
Yes, please. Can we bail? No, I'm kidding. You, everybody knows how much I love Vale.
Vale's great.
Oh boy. Anyhow, the one thing, you know, I hear spies say so much that's true about security, but there's one issue we have is that I think a lot of people come to our side with very good intentions, but they're just kind of dumb. And they will be taken off with the, you know, the next Pied Piper that comes along. And when we've seen some people that we thought were just going to be great, just go with the dummies and with the liars. And so that is something I think we just have to watch out for is stupidity. In, you know, against stupidity, even the gods are helpless. So I think we've done a pretty good job because all of us now have been around for so long that we have a core group of people who we trust. And, you know, together we kind of form a front that is going to be impenetrable by stupidity. And so there is a thing that, you know, new people have just got to understand. Yeah, we welcome you, but we're also going to keep you at an arm's length for a little while, you know, you have to listen and learn before you come in here and start trying to tell people what to do. And that's just kind of where I'm at. I'm like really thankful for FTJ because it's run by a grown up. Dave is a smart guy and he, you know, no nonsense, but also extremely giving. I mean, this guy has dedicated his life, takes no salary from it or anything. I mean, it costs him money to provide this to us. He's an honorable man. And so I think we're in a good place right now, even though we're a lot smaller than we were like a year ago. You know, a year ago, we kind of felt good that we were so big. Now I'm kind of happy we're a little smaller and stronger, a little more polished. As for what I have going on, my first number one thing is I got to move. And, you know, that's going to take a lot of my attention over the next few weeks. But then past that, you know, we need to get Spice Stream up and going fully with good equipment. That's going to happen. And then eventually, I always swore I wouldn't do it, but I'm going to stream. It'll just be, I mean, it's a kind of unfair to even say I'm doing it because actually Spy will be doing it. I just will kind of help provide the format, but I've kind of cut my teeth on helping him put together his streams. And so I kind of understand now what goes into it. And that's kind of where my strengths are, is composing something. But I don't really, I mean, it went okay tonight, but I really don't like public speaking. And even on my own stream, you probably won't hear me talk a lot. Certainly not like off the cuff anyhow. I'll have an AI huntress do the talking or something. I'd use that girl.
That's the proper use of technology right there.
Yeah. And it will be focused on arts and culture and history and literature and, you know, just trying to bring new people to our side. I also think FTJ has a strength with that because we can just go out there and simply say, hey, it's a free speech site. You know, it is curated, you know, not everybody can come here and stream, but it's reason for being is it's for free speech. And we're getting to a point in this country where you know, everybody's kind of pissed off about not being able to speak. You know, the liberals are feeling trampled on, the conservatives are, we've known it for a long time. So I see a comment in the chat, I thought Huntress was a robot IRL. And, you know, I've been accused of lots of things, not being real, that Spy made me up, or that I'm a man, you know? And so I kind of felt like, yeah, it's about time I get on a stream and show people I am exactly who I say I am, just an old lady.
Shocking stuff.
And I can't think of two better people to do it with. I mean, Spive puts me very much at ease, and Flood's a dear friend. So it was good to do this. Thank you for having us.
Well, thank you for coming on. And thank you guys so much for everything that you've done for us. Go ahead, man.
I left you a song in the chat, the TG chat. It's some degent grass.
I knew it was gonna come. I said he's gonna bring that banjo metal. He's gonna bring the gent, the country gentleman. Okay.
Hey, this is some of that Dixie shit, man.
Hey, this is your show, man. You guys get to set the rules and the music and everything. So I think it's great. We are we're getting pretty close. It's about 7:30. We've had you for 2.5 hours. We're gonna play Spy's his musical invention, which you're gonna love, and then if there's anything you want to sign off with after that, like your, you know, where people can find you, when your show's on, all that kind of stuff, then we'll go over that, and then we'll wrap it up. But in the meantime, this is you got a name for this? Let me see here.
No, I don't have a name for it.
He hasn't got a name yet, but he will. In fact, if you guys have any names, anything pops into your mind, just put it in the chat right now. This is going to be great. Oh, yeah, I feel like I just smoked some fucking bluegrass. I'll give you guys a minute because I know you're watching the stream. Because that's fire, man. You guys got Nick Noviking all jacked up. So you guys got Nick all jacked. You see how fast he was dancing, man? That That gent metal is pretty badass shit.
Isn't that cool? Yeah.
I love to tell you're innovative, man. There's not a lot of people innovating, but the more the better. And I think we got two fantastic innovators here. Tell people where they can find you, how they can watch you, follow you, support you, any of those things.
Well, you can find me right here on FTJ. The name of the show is called The Digital Battlefront. I'm also going to start streaming here soon on Volk. Love, Johnny Doomsayer's site, another good friend, somebody I trust as well. Probably on X. Now I'm verified on there now. Now I can start like wreaking some fucking havoc and shit, you know, start doing some spaces and shit. So we'll see. Yeah, we'll see how that goes. I just need to figure out how where to get the RTMP link to do the stream. I'd seen that like you could only get it from like Restream or Ustream or something like that, where their actual RTMP server is. Not sure, but that's something I'm gonna have to figure out.
Yeah, hit me up on the back end. Flood. Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay.
They make it really easy.
And cool. So, I think definitely the message that I have, I'd like to spread it out a lot more and get it going to multiple places. And it does seem that like FTJ's Restreamer is working. So that saves the $30 that you have to pay for, you know, Restream or whatnot every month. But so, and also I'm glad to actually be part of, their tech team as well. I've been very, very well received there. So, but yeah, that's where I'm at.
Massive. Guys, catch Spy Hunter and catch his stream. He's going to be debuting on FTJ soon, hopefully within the next week or so. Keep your eyes out for the Digital Battlefront. Go find him now and give him a follow. Huntress is there, too. You can find her. Huntress, tell us where people can find you, how they can support you, how they can connect with you.
Well, my face has been plastered everywhere.
Tell me about it. I give Huntress shit. You guys, by the way, I give Huntress a lot of shit. I don't want anyone to think that there's not look, it's not always rosy. We get on each other's nerves sometimes. We piss each other off sometimes. That's why we're friends, you know, because like we can overcome those things. Yeah. You know, it's not like, fuck you. You said something. Well, I'm leaving forever. Fuck you. It's not like that, man. Like we're a team. We're a race. We're a nation.
Yep.
Yeah. You're going to have to try harder to get rid of me. Sticking around. Yeah. I'm on FTJ. I have a channel there with all my, I've done like 58 songs that I have up there. I have others that I've taken down.
For bass.
Went wild with that. And I'm, of course, Huntress on Gab. That's kind of still my home base. And Nice Crew. I'm on X, but Spy spelled my name all funny with numbers and shit. So you
right, numbers are letters now, right? Thanks, Juice. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know how I operate.
that's been growing on X is good. And also Flood Social, TikTok, Instagram, and I'm even on Facebook again. We'll see how well that lasts. And Volk, come over to Volk. That's a nice site there with Johnny. I mostly just post show links there because I spam Flood show links and Nick links and Digital Battlefront links everywhere. to the point that I've actually gotten complaints from people that I post too many show links. But and the Niggerarium, love the Niggerarium, happy to be there. And the other thing is I started a Telegram chat group there where I post a video that's it's from a paid site, but I just want to kind of donate it to the community when you need a stock video. I posted a lot that are like from Europe and America and, you know, just this kind of scenic stuff. And if you have something that you're looking for, send me a message and I'll try to find something for you. If you just need some stock video.
That's right.
Then Spy AI is going to be my new home more than any other place, I think.
Okay, yeah, I put your Telegram.
That's still in the works.
Spy AI. Keep that in mind, too, guys. FPY.AI. Or, I'm sorry, 5PY. Motherfucker with the numbers. You're right.
Yeah.
Hey, well, at least I started her first name with an H. And not her, you know, something else. Yeah. Yeah. But, Spy AI, that's kind of my main project right now. So, I've got all the tools, everything I need to build it. It's just, I'm just getting all the code worked out, trying to get the framework together, to make it a very cohesive, intuitive and, enjoyable site. So that way, all of our guys can start doing deep fakes and propaganda and art and, you know, just whatever you want. What I want Spy AI to be is kind of a not just one model where you do one thing. No, I want it to be a complete workstation where you've got all of the tools that you need for the message that you want to get out there. Right there in one spot. You don't have to go anywhere else.
One-stop shopping for AI. I'm all about that. You know I'm waiting for you to steal some lip sync and shit. You already know, man. Like, hey, that foul AI I got on there.
I'm looking.
Their lip syncer 2.0 is unbelievably good. But like,
oh, it's fantastic.
$3 a minute. I was like, shit, yeah, nigga. Shit, nigga, I'm fixing Wave to Lip tonight. After this show, I'm going to get back in Wave to Lip. Because that shit free, bro. Free.
Shit.
Yeah.
Maybe the thing to do would be to improve that Wave to Lip somehow. You know, that'd be something I'll look into as well.
Yeah, because it's a fairly old system, and I think Grok can help me with that. I hope. Mm. Ladies and gentlemen,
I'll help you out, man. You whatever question.
Okay,
You just let me know.
I'll hit you up because we'll be hitting you up on the stream thing anyway and show you where to get the key.
Absolutely. Okay, cool.
It's getting about time. Night Nation's going to be warming up here pretty soon. It's about 7:40. Time just gets away from us on these big brain shows. But we've had the pleasure of hosting Spy Hunter and Huntress, and everybody should know who they are and where they're at. By now, but I'll make sure that the links are added to the description. And guys, throw them up some Romans for spending two and three quarter hard hours in the hot seat tonight and getting grilled by a black man. Just kidding. Black men don't grill. Guys, it's okay. Cool. Throw them some Romans, please, guys. I can't wait to have you back on the show, have you guys back regularly, like once a month or so. I'm definitely going to be hitting you up for the May big brain shows too. So keep me a day open, you know, talk about it and keep a day open for me.
Absolutely. 100%. I look forward to every opportunity I get to be on a big brain show with you, Ben.
I'm glad, and thank you, Huntress, for making your debut on our show. It's a real pleasure to have you, and it's high time that people got to meet you.
It was a lot more fun than I expected. I thought I would hate it, but it actually was just fine. Thank you.
That's a huge white pill. Thank you. And you know how we end these. I cut everybody off at the end of these. It's nice to talk to those guys. They're some of the best. And when you talk about friends, when you talk about loyalty, and you talk about things that really matter, you know, I can slightly just sit back. And Huntress is dead right, you know. Even though we might have a little bit of a slightly smaller tribe than we have had in the past, but we've got a much, much stronger, more resilient, more battle hardened tribe as well. And because of that, you guys have supported the show quite a bit tonight. And I want to thank all the guests, past and present. I see VSOF is hanging out in the chat, and so many people that I've met. Doomsayer's hanging out in the chat. Night Nation Nick is no stranger to the Big Brain Show or the Doom Depot. And I can't wait to add even more people. I see Nerdy hanging out with us. We did a show with Nerdy and Smoko a long time ago. I just put that show up in the library, which, by the way, thanks to VSOF, if you look in the description for this show, or if you look in the bio on the platforms that you're on for me, you will find two new repositories, right? You will find two new hosting areas for all of the audiobooks and all of the Big Brain shows that I've done, that I've held on to, right? I accidentally lost Anon Goys and Ben Tanklin. Somebody stole that one from me. And yeah, there's probably a couple other people out there that fagged it up, so to speak. But you'll find new links and a new place to go, and you can download all of the audiobooks and all of the Big Brain shows in those two locations. And big shout out to VSOF for hooking me up with Mega, talking me into getting on that deal. About five times as much bandwidth for half the price as I was getting before makes the audiobook project possible again, right? And it's you guys that really do make this all possible, right? And I wouldn't be able to do it without the hot tips and without the generous support from you guys, and just without, if you guys weren't friends, I wouldn't have any reason to do this, you know? So thank you, man. And in every way, all the people that have played small and big parts in this show all deserve all the credit.